I'm Casper Dogovins, Dogman, and listening to Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back, Sense fans, to the Sixth Sense Podcast, the most irreverent podcast on the internet. I'm here joined by both Tim and Graham this week. Guys, how you doing?
Excellent.
Fantastic. How's it going, boys?
Great.
Yeah, it's putting through the ringer, much like the Senators, so I can identify with them these days. How are you guys keeping up?
Well,
is it even fair to criticize this team right now?
I think you give it. You have to give them a mulligan.
As you both inhale deeply, you're just, does anyone ever want to touch this issue? It doesn't look like it.
Yeah, the human side meeting the sports side rarely results in good things, right?
No,
so
exactly.
It's probably best if we just keep them separate right now and just be human about it instead.
You know, it's obviously extreme circumstances going on right now. I think we can't jump ship right away and we can't make a mountain out of a molehill. Are there things going on right now that are not very good? Absolutely. Are there some positives? Yeah, of course. So I think in due time we'll be able to fairly assess where this team stands, but I don't think it's necessary right now to press the panic button after this four-game road trip that hasn't really gone very well at all.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some positive stuff here that's come out of this. At least we can see over the past week, the Senators have really rallied around each other, which has got to be great for their team building, something that maybe hasn't been there before. The cohesion, despite these guys playing together for so many years and doing all those fun little trips to Petawawa and everything else. But, you know, this could be a really excellent rallying point, and even more so because it's going to be, you know, genuine and from the heart, not just some public relations semantics used to appease the press corps. People can actually believe in this and get behind it, and hopefully it makes them better going forward.
That's a great point, and I don't think either of the Brian Lee or David Hale possible imminent departures are really going to affect matters either. So that's actually a great point. It is, unfortunately, because of the circumstances, it has to be a rallying point for this team. It's sad to say it, but it's true.
It's really nice to see Daniel Alfredson step up as a human being, as an individual, and say the things he said, and you know,
they all have,
he's a courageous individual.
I think Chris Phillips and Mike Fisher have been fantastic in their comments towards the media. Everyone said the right things. It's all genuine, and it's something that they can hopefully and not really allow themselves to get behind the eight ball too much here in the next few games.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's a devastating situation, but as hard as it might be, I think, you know, you have to take whatever positives you can out of any type of this type of situation and use that to build upon it and have it move forward in a positive way and try and sort of reverse the declining trend that's we've seen over the past few games.
Yeah, like I know we talk about a lot about intangibles in the show and in hockey in general, but one thing you cannot refute is the fact that Brian Murray has in fact done a good job of bringing in quality character people, as he says, and you know, this has just been evident throughout the week, so he definitely gets the handshake on that one for a job well done that's obviously come to fruition.
The only thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is that this team isn't in a position where they're good enough to afford to sit on their laurels and feel sorry for themselves. Like, look at what happened last night with Carolina. They got piss pumped, and Carolina never let their foot off.
Piss pumped?
Yeah, Graham, you and I have been on a ball field a few times where we've gotten piss pumped ourselves, so that's not a very good feeling, man.
Piss pumped? It sounds like something a Detroit auto worker says as he's walking away with his pink slip.
Or Randy Quaid's character in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Shitter's full.
Merry fucking Christmas.
Piss pumped. That's great. I love it. What a transition this has been. So let's talk more about this piss pumping they received at the you know, at the old pisser well the other night in Carolina.
When I said piss pumps, your eyes lit up like Jim Lang's.
Let's have at her. All right, let's keep going. So the piss pumping in Carolina, Graham. What happened there?
Oh, Carolina. At least on Twitter, anyways, a number of people were complaining that Carolina was running up the score a bit.
Well,
nobody's going to feel sorry. That was my point. Nobody's going to feel sorry for Ottawa's circumstances. It's professional sports, right?
I would be very disappointed in any team that ever, you know, took the foot off the gas in the NHL. That would be disgusting. I'm glad that they, you know, sometimes teams deserve to get humiliated, right? You know, the same way that, who was it? The Islanders recently, who got waxed real bad 2 games in a row?
Yeah, the Blues got just piss pumped against against Columbus. So,
you know, it can be humbling for a team, and that's maybe what a team like Ottawa needs. And absolutely, just run it up and get piss pumped.
Is this a good podcast so far?
Yes, it is. It's fantastic. You're ruining it with your paper turning.
The one thing is, I think 7-1, good teams that have a killer instinct, they're not going to take their foot off the gas, right? So if I'm Carolina, like, I don't know, if we had a team when we had Heatley and those guys a couple of years ago where everyone wants the free pizza and the accoutrement that all comes with running up the score, and you know, no one was saying, oh, we shouldn't run up the score and stuff like that. I mean, I think it's a sign of a good team. Like, you know, when you step on the ice, you play 60 minutes. Whether you're up 6-1 or whether you're down 6-1, you play 60 minutes. That is your commitment to fans and to yourself as a professional athlete in the NHL.
No, absolutely. And Carolina had a lot to prove. Their team below Ottawa right now, and I'm sure we're going to talk about later on in the show, you got to beat the teams above you so that you can stay in the playoff hunt once in a while. And Carolina did exactly that, and in wonderful fashion.
Prior to the past few games, Ottawa's poor play extended into last week against Vancouver. Some of the team's bad habits have crept into this week. And Ottawa looks kind of exposed right now. It looks like they've lost their focus. And should we be concerned that this thing could snowball bigger than it has?
Well, one of the things, I mean, I mentioned on the podcast, the last podcast we did, Graham, when we started the show, and we were happy about Ottawa being over 500. But the first question I asked, because, you know, I'm sometimes a pessimist when it comes to these things, or actually I'm all the time a pessimist when it comes to these things, being a jaded Boston Red Sox fan for years, was how many teams over 500 have we beaten? And the question to that is not very many. So, but the problem is now, with the way they're playing, is it even possible to backdoor their way into the playoffs by beating the bad teams and not beating the good teams? Because right now, the way they're playing and some of, like you say, the bad habits that have crept into their game, I don't know if they can run the table against the bad teams they should be able to run the table against.
See, one of the things that kills me about all this is, you know, in the broader sense of the picture of the Ottawa Senators organization, how comfortable are you guys with a team that's just going to, you know, creep into the playoffs by, you know, as Francois said, just beating down, like just, you know, slipping in the back door to the playoffs and getting ousted after one round? What good is that doing to our franchise in, you know, in the short term and in the long term? People are going to be angry that this team can't win when it matters most, and or they're going to be unhappy that this team isn't stockpiling the cupboards and trying to rebuild.
It is a love-hate situation, and it's been like this for the past 3 years, right? Like, we've seen the ups and downs. We've experienced them. The team will start hot, and then they'll slip out. And it is frustrating. But you learn, I think at the same time, you learn not to get too high or too low. But is it a recipe for success in the post-cap era? I don't know if it is.
Yeah, and especially in this type of era of hockey, it's the old argument where it's, would you rather be in the playoffs and have a chance, or are you building a team to be a contender off the bat? And I think more times than not, if you're hoping to get in the playoffs and catch lightning in a bottle, I mean, the examples of teams that have actually gone all the way using that model are few and far between. And even though the Philadelphia Flyers were the 8th seed last year in the East, at the outset, on paper, that roster was picked by a lot of prognosticators to make big-time noise in the playoffs. And they just, you know, they battled through a lot of injuries all year. So I don't think the Philadelphia Flyers were a true 8th seed last year. And we're seeing that this year with their performance. They're a very dominant team. So, I mean, what do you want to do? Do you want to try and sneak into the playoffs and hope you catch lightning in a bottle? Or do you really want to have a legitimate 2-3 year plan in place where you're trying to build a team that the goal is, we are a Stanley Cup contender?
Well, I think personally the better idea is to plan 2 or 3 years down the road and hope that that team is capable of catching lightning in a bottle, as you say. You know, everyone knows that good teams, President's trophies, don't mean anything in the playoffs. And, you know, but at some point, though, you got to get sick of people saying, well, when you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. Well, there's, you know, there's always a Cinderella team, but it's usually one team. And there's, what, 16 teams that make the playoffs every year? It's a 1 in 16 chance of, you know, maybe having, you know, the privilege of getting beaten in the Eastern Finals. Is that really good enough? No, not to me it isn't.
Last season there was a story. Philadelphia snuck in on a shootout win on their last regular season game against the Rangers. And a lot of people, pundits, look at that example as a, you know, it's a Cinderella story. They got in on the last day. But in reality, they don't look at this team and say, you know what, that's a team with a hell of a lot of young prospects who've panned out. And now they're key cogs on that club. And they also had a Norris Trophy winning defenseman. Does Ottawa have that mix? It's tough. Is that the benchmark for success as an 8 seed? Like, it's a weird circumstance because there aren't too many teams, like meddling teams, where you're like, hey, that team's going to win a cup soon. You know? And I think Ottawa's kind of maybe fallen into that trap a little bit. Like, I wouldn't look at a New Jersey Devils team and say, hey, that's a team that's like headed in the right direction.
No, I think you're right. And I think we talked about this extensively off air, Graham. The Flyers, in terms of forwards, might arguably have the deepest mix of forwards in the entire NHL. And if they could get their goaltending situation figured out, they look very good to perhaps take the whole thing this year. And I watching that game against Philadelphia, we didn't belong on the same ice. I mean, regardless of the circumstances and everything else, I think if you compare the rosters on paper, then you see how that game shook down. We're nowhere close to where we need to be if we're looking to make a serious run at a Stanley Cup within the next couple of years.
One of the key traits in the last few games where they've actually played, you know, those upper echelon clubs like Vancouver or Philadelphia has been that they've kept the game close for approximately 40 minutes and then the wheels fall right off. It's like those other teams have that extra gear that when it comes to crunch time, they'll excel. And I haven't really seen that from Ottawa yet.
Have the Senators had a good third period yet this year? I feel like I watch every third period just expecting them to blow the lead, if they even do have the lead at that point.
But the record after having the lead through two periods is, I think, perfect.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have a fairly good structured game going. The problem is that we can't play from behind. And more often than not, when we're playing those upper echelon teams, we get behind. And we're not a good enough team that can afford to take gambles and take risks, because when we do, guess what? Puck ends up in the back of our net and we're down 3-1, and then 30 seconds later, 4-1, Ryan Kessler, 2 goals, you know, so you can see it. It's the same pattern against teams out there where it's just one, when we're forced to have to open it up to try and make up some ground.
Teams just put us to bed.
Don't have the horses.
Yep.
All right, guys. So, you know, we've talked about a lot of different topics here. Obviously, there's a lot of things that can be further discussed. So how about we go to our first guest, James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen, and see if we can try and make some sense out of this discussion and see where we might go from here.
Sounds good.
Excellent.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, listeners, we're on the phone with James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. James, thanks for joining the Sixth Sense podcast. How are you?
No problem, guys. How are you?
Excellent. It's a beautiful day in Ottawa.
Another one.
All right, James, so right off the bat, the Senators have been outscored 18-6 over the past 4 games. Considering everything that's happened over the past week, when is it appropriate to critique this team, or are we just going to hope that they can get them out of the hole themselves?
Well, I mean, it's kind of been a topic of conversation over the last few days, actually, just about, you know, like, obviously everybody knows the circumstances here in Ottawa and the kind of challenges the Senators had to deal with on Wednesday. Just obviously that would be an emotionally draining way to start your day, to go to to something that obviously the whole team was behind in supporting Luke Richardson and his family, but and then hopping the plane right away to go to Raleigh. And you know, I think I've heard a couple people I consider to be very cynical kind of say, well, you know, you're giving them a free pass because of all this, and you know, it's just like, for lack of better words, it's an excuse and blah blah blah. And I mean, you know, there's situations in life that go beyond hockey and that obviously would have a great effect on a team and its ability to perform. And I think that's exactly what happened on Wednesday night against the Hurricanes, and the score 7-1 obviously, and it was just a long day. So and I could probably see some of that carrying over, just because they are traveling still, and maybe they come home and regroup, and they have another tough game obviously against the LA Kings, and who knows what happens after that. But I'm thinking they probably won't have the greatest game again against the Blues, and you know, maybe they just need to come home after that and reset, and then after all this has passed a little bit, you know, then you get straight back to the sort of only look at it. But I mean, it's hard not to give these guys a break as a human being.
That's a good point, and there is a little bit of cynicism going around. I know when the news broke on Saturday that Darren Richardson had passed away, I thought Ottawa responded very well against the Bruins. And
yeah, and you know, like that's one of those things where maybe you rally around your the guys and you really get that sense of a team when you someone is having a hard time and you have to pull it all together, and clearly they did a good job handling it the first night. But I mean, I think anybody who also hears that kind of thing that day, it's also a shocking thing. I mean, I've never, you know, exclaimed out loud before getting a press release, and I said, oh my God, because it's such a jarring thing. And you know, if these guys, you know, they're friends with Luke, and they're teammates with him, and it's a shocking, jarring thing, and maybe it just took a day or two to settle in what had happened here and what it meant for someone who is obviously very important to them. So they did well, and then maybe, like I said, once they attended the ceremony and had a couple days to think about it, it started to maybe have an effect on them.
With the past three or four games, going back to obviously before the tragedy, so the game against Vancouver and a few others, you know, how long do you think this slide might continue? I know you mentioned they're probably not going to have a great game against St. Louis, and I don't think any of us expect them to have a good game against St. Louis. Do you think that what we're seeing right now could possibly decide the outcome for the rest of the year for the Senators team?
Well, I think it certainly would have been the case if they hadn't been able to rattle off those few wins before this week came up. And it's something we were talking about earlier in the month and late in October. You know, this could be the road trip, because you look at the teams and you look at the schedule. This could be the one that really sinks them and puts them in a really difficult position. Now, they're still 500, and because they gave themselves a little bit of a cushion, I don't think it's the end of the world if they lose to St. Louis and then they lose to a really good LA team. And you know, independent of all these kind of challenges, this was going to be a difficult week anyways, and they were probably not going to win more than, you know, I think they would have been thrilled to walk away with two wins out of four. So, you know, like I said, if they hadn't turned things around and shown that they can play as a team and that they can string some wins together, certainly I think it would be panic time. But I think they've given themselves a bit of a cushion here, and you know, they'll come home and start trying to regroup and hopefully get back on track in time so that they don't fall out of the race completely. I mean, if I look at the standings today, I think they're still in eighth place, so it's not like they've completely fallen off the map.
Now, one thing we do know is that the American Thanksgiving is often a big turning point for the playoff picture. only a handful of teams that are not in playoff position after this weekend, by and large, don't make it. Where do you see the biggest shortcoming with the Senators right now versus the competition they've faced? We've seen them rough up some bottom-feeding teams, and we've also seen them be unable to compete with some of the more elite teams in the league. Where do you see the biggest flaws with the team at this point in the season?
Well, I think I tried to make that point on our blog site this week. I think they're doing what they should be doing or what they were kind of expected to do, and that's be a middle-of-the-road team that can win the games that they're supposed to win against the teams they're supposed to beat. Like, we're talking about the Atlantas and the Floridas and the Torontos of the world, and they are losing to some good teams and mostly good teams. And I understand how that worries a lot of people, because it's one thing to get into the playoffs, and that's great, but people in this city, I think, have come to expect, a contender almost every year, and it's not satisfying, I guess, for them to get into the first round and then lose out. So obviously, that is a real concern that, it's nice to get in, but when you face, insert team here, Philly, Washington, Boston in the first round, are they just going to get swept out? So, it's just these games, what they've shown in the games where they've won is they play as a strong unit. They support each other. They support the puck. They move it well. They don't have these horrible giveaways. Like, Erik Karlsson the last couple of days has not looked good handling the puck, and it's those up and down things where you looked at him the week before when they're beating these teams and you say, there's the guy who was really great at the end of last season and in the playoffs against Pittsburgh. So I don't know if it's a loss of concentration type thing and they just need to be reminded of that or what, but you look at the team's record last year with all the ups and downs and the winning and losing streaks, and maybe we shouldn't be all that surprised about it.
We've talked about how we're not really surprised at the direction the team's going because of the circumstances that they've been in. Two players in particular seem like they've been dealing with some injuries. And I've been kind of concerned about their lack of production, or at least their effectiveness in the past couple of games. I thought Mahalik actually played a strong game last night, but I'm a little bit concerned about him and Mike Fisher. What are your thoughts on their player lately?
Well, it's one of those things where I thought it was interesting to listen to Corey Kluson talk about Mike Fisher this week, because I think we all know just from watching that he's not 100%. He doesn't have the same speed or the same aggressiveness on the puck that you expect from him when he's feeling 100%. So sometimes it's hard to tell a player not to play if they want to go. If they say they're good enough to go, all you can really do is put them in, and then maybe you cut back their ice time a little, but it's not really an option most of the time. So then you ask the question, is it hurting the team more to have him in there? Because maybe you get someone in there who can skate and make a contribution, and I guess you weigh that. But, certainly you guys are right. Fisher hasn't looked good. He's clearly hurting, and I guess you just, as a team and as an organization, you try and weigh the pros and cons of having him in there and work from that.
In the last couple of games, obviously, it goes beyond the goaltending. When they're getting 6 and 7 goals scored on them. But at what point do you think it's reasonable to start pointing the finger at Brian Elliott and saying, this guy should be bailing us out a little bit more when we're going through tough stretches as a team? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I think Brian Elliott, for one reason or another, and maybe it's the kind of struggle in the playoffs, or he does give up an iffy goal here and there. He may have established himself as the number one in the team's eyes. He's ever established that in the fans' eyes, and I think you can point the finger at the goaltender at some point, but struggling. There are so many breakdowns. I can't even count the number of shorthanded breakaways they've given up the last few days. And it's tough when you're out there and you're getting completely shelled, and then you let in 1 and 2, and then it becomes like a tidal wave because the whole team has gone off the rails. So You know, it's fair is fair. When Brian Elliott lets in some bad goals, and I didn't think either of the first two goals were that great against Carolina last night, then you know, that's fair game. But when the team is playing so poorly, obviously you don't lay all the blame at his feet and have a little understanding the position he's in. He's trying to kind of hold the fort, and he's getting basically run over. So, yeah, I mean, it's a situational thing. You can't always point the finger at the goalies, but sometimes you can.
Watching Pascal Leclerc come into the game last night after it was 4-0, it brought a little confidence up, though. I felt pretty good about it. Thought we had a chance.
So going from too many goals to not enough goals, a guy who's been dealing with a lot of pressure right now not to end up in legendary Bill McCault status is Nick Foligno. James, what's it going to take for Nick Foligno to get going and start putting some pucks in the net?
I think the Senators would love to know the answer to that question. Here's a guy who had a great preseason and went through his own share of personal struggles last year. And I think the team really had some big expectations for him this year. And you saw that earlier this season when he wasn't scoring, and he still isn't scoring. But when Brian Murray approached him after a game and said, look, you're playing on the first, second line here, do something with it. I don't know what it is. I think he's looked better since he's moved down because he doesn't have that pressure of being a top six guy.
No, I completely agree, James. I think that he's done a really good job of at least trying to create some traffic and some action in front of the net. It just seems that he's been unable to finish. You know, his hands just haven't looked that great.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing is he comes with that first-round label. So a large portion of first-rounders won't work out the way you expected. I mean, look at Brian Lee. Maybe all Nick Foligno is a third and fourth line grinder who does that job well and who can bring some energy. But you know, I don't think he's a very good skater. He obviously has some problems with finish, as you mentioned. So maybe it's time for people to drop those expectations for him to fill that role and just say, look, this guy's going to be a solid role player and that's it.
Going from one first-rounder to another first-rounder in the latter part of his career. Chris Phillips seems like he's having a bit of a tough time this year. Do you think you see him in the short-term sort of future plans of the organization, or might this year be sort of a year where the organization might finally decide to go in a different direction, especially given all the young talent that they've stockpiled on the blue line?
I guess we'll see. And part of the issue was, you know, I'm sure they would have loved to keep Anton Volchenkov around, but he asked for a lot more money than they could afford. And, you know, we don't know at this point what Chris Phillips' expectations are. We don't know how he's going to close out the season. You know, who knows? Maybe this team gets on a roll and he rebounds really well and becomes that key shutdown guy again. It's a little early to say what the plans will be there. But, you know, here's another long-tenured defenseman with the team who has a solid reputation in the community and all that stuff. So maybe there's a bit of a sentimental, you know, factor that the team would look at there. But, you have to be wary about overpaying for defensive defensemen because, you know, you can get some guys at a decent price who can at least not make mistakes in their own zone. And then you look at a guy like David Hale, who's played really well this year for not much money at all. And the greatest thing about him is you don't notice him out there, and he just does his job. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where the team goes on that. And, you know, I assume Chris Phillips would want to stay here, but, you know, how much of a cut would he be willing to take to do that?
You mentioned the phrase, who knows, and that's kind of been the response to the question, what the hell is going on with Brian Lee? Like, why is he still up with the organization, James? Some of your colleagues at other papers have noted that there's absolutely no trade market for this player. He's been a healthy scratcher for how many games in a row now?
10 games.
Ten games?
Maybe 11.
And it's just an instance where the guy has no inherent trade value. He's not getting into games. Why is he still up with this club? It's almost gotten to the point where it's kind of laughable because we're not doing this guy any favors in furthering his career if it's not in Ottawa.
Well, and I think a lot of people had raised eyebrows when Brian Murray signed him to a one-way contract and kept him around after he had, you know, struggled to establish himself here. And, you know, you're never going to get trade value, like you mentioned, out of a guy who doesn't play. I mean, if he's not even good enough to make this roster, and let's be honest, the defense this year hasn't been great, then, you know, why would another team roll the dice on him and hope, you know, here's a former ninth overall pick who maybe has some upside? So, you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people were mystified when he did go that high in the first place, and now he obviously isn't living up to those expectations either. And it's kind of a strange situation because if you remember when he first came up, this team was really seemed to be excited about him, and Brian Murray said something like, if I'm not mistaken, I vaguely remember the press conference where he said, you know, Brian Lee is an NHL player now. So he's, I don't know what's going on with Brian Lee and his own development in his own life. Some players, you know, start well and fade away, and nobody knows what's going on with Brian Lee. I don't know what you do with him because you can't move him. Maybe he's a guy, and I'm sure Eugene Melnyk doesn't like paying money for nothing, but who would you rather have in the lineup right now, David Hale or Brian Lee? And do you risk sending him down or losing him or just parking him there and paying his salary to not play for your team?
Well, at least Brian Lee's getting a crack at practicing in the forward position over the past few days, which is good for him. Maybe he can diversify his skill set and make a slight career change.
Take his talents to South Beach.
Yeah, maybe he learned a thing or two from Chris Campoli last year.
So I feel like this interview's taken on a fairly... I'd say it's pretty negative right now. So, James, do you have any, like, what would you say are some of the real positives that we've seen through the season thus far? What are the bright spots for you?
Well, you know, like I said, people don't seem to be able to get behind Brian Elliott in the city, and I think he's been good for the most part. Like you mentioned before, it's been a tough week all around for the Senators, but I think when Elliott is playing well, he's a really solid NHL starter. And I mean, look at his stats, and I think those speak for themselves. Does he let in some bad goals sometimes? Yes, but at the end of the day, no, I don't think many teams would feel uncomfortable with him in that position. And you know, there's been some upside with the Jason Spezza and Regan and Kovalev line after a couple of those guys were off to a slow start. So you know, there's good potential for this team if Fisher can get healthy and McCulloch is feeling good. And, you know, I don't know if Alfredson's 100% either. And you know, if he can get healed up and then you have a pretty solid third line and your energy guys on the fourth, then they have, I think, pretty decent depth up front. So that's positive. And the last thing is, and that's the point I made in my piece earlier this week, is once you get into the playoffs, anything can happen, and you know, it might be a bad comparison because, you know, Philly got in on the last day last year in the shootout, but a lot of people had picked them as a contender at the first or in the preseason. But if you look back over the years, there's a lot of teams that have surprised a lot of people in the playoffs, and some really good teams that completely flame out. So if this team is good enough to hold it together to get into the playoffs, then anything can happen, and last season against Pittsburgh, I think, was a good example. A couple bounces go their way, or they hold on in Game 6, and it's a completely different series. So I think they're a good enough team to make the playoffs, and like I said, you know, in this NHL where anybody can win any playoff series, maybe that's all you need at this point and go from there.
Well, James, we just wanted to thank you for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to answer some of our questions. And, you know, your insight is always valuable. And we hope we can do this again sometime real soon. And we just want to thank you once again. And
absolutely,
that's it.
Guys. No problem.
Thanks, James.
Take the dirt from a hollow tree, in the eyes of a branch and the teeth of a leaf. Build you a path where the sun don't shine, farther from, farther from wide. Cross the waves beneath the sky, lay me down in the farthest wide. Know that I'll be satisfied, farther out, farther.
Rather than dwell on the negativity surrounding the Ottawa Senators right now and their current performance, why don't we take a look ahead to the brighter wave of the future? Why don't we talk to an NCAA standout who will hopefully be part of the Senators' plans moving forward? We're a little short for time today, so we want to get right into this interview. Very interesting guy. Let's go to Louis Caparuso.
All right, listeners, we're back on the line with Louis Caparuso, a third-round pick for the Senators in 2007, drafted 90th overall. Louis, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, good to have you.
Thanks
for
coming on.
It's my pleasure. So, Lou, we're just going to jump right into this. Right off the bat, you know, we're interested to know, and I'm sure the listeners are interested to know, what made you choose the collegiate route as opposed to other options?
You know, I came on a visit with my club team, the Toronto Red Wings, and I saw the University of Michigan, and I knew from that moment when I watched the game at Yost Arena, I didn't want to play anywhere else but there. I mean, just a different. It's a different lifestyle. It's a different way of playing hockey. I mean, you don't get that much. That many fans who have so much pride in what you're doing on the ice, I think, anywhere else. So it's definitely something special.
All right, Louis. So knowing what you know now about the collegiate game, what advice would you give to a kid who is a few years younger than you, weighing the same options about whether they should go into the OHL or to play NCAA hockey?
Well, I can only speak for the NCAA because I haven't, played for the OHL. But, from the NCAA point of view, I think, you get your 4 years of development. You're in a steady situation where you have coaches that are pretty much stuck with you. You know, you're not going to get cut. You're not going to get sent down or traded. So you're in a situation where the coaches have bought into you, and basically they have no choice but to try to make you a better player. And I think that, along with school, I mean, getting an education was important to me and my family. So with those two things, I think that was the biggest reason why I would say, to play college hockey. I mean, I don't know much about the OHL having not played there, but, there's also great, people have, obviously great players have come out of the OHL and or, just the CHL. So that's what I would tell someone younger than me.
Yeah, I noticed that you stuck there for all 4 years. You're a senior now. Have you ever felt the pressure maybe to come out early? Because I know there have been a couple other Senators prospects who've actually made the jump before. So did that ever weigh against your mind?
Yeah, here and there. I mean, you think about it every now and then, what you could do at the next level. And you always want to get ahead. You always want to, move on and try to get ahead. But at the same time, I knew I could keep developing here and I could keep getting confidence and, at the end of the day, I want to be busting at the seams when it comes to, making my way into pro hockey. So, I think, Coach Berenson had a great plan for me, and as did the rest of the coaching staff. So, I just bought into the system here, and I'm pretty confident that they're doing a great job.
All right, Louis, over the past few seasons, you've really shown everyone your ability to score. You're almost at a point of game over your NCAA career. Hobie Baker nod. But we've also read that you're really working on your all-around play this year, including some penalty kill time. How important was it for you to develop into an all-around better player?
I think it's huge. You got to learn how to play without the puck. That's the biggest thing that our coach talks about. I mean, I want to be the best I can be without the puck. Playing away in your own end, and you obviously want to score goals. You always want to be a goal scorer. I enjoy scoring goals. It's a passion. But if I ever want to play at the next level, I understand that most of the time the puck's not going to be on your stick. So it's what you're doing without the puck that matters. So whether it be on the penalty kill, just trying to definitely round up my edges as for my whole game.
We were looking at some numbers last year, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that. And we saw that Michigan had graduated, I think it was 23 players who are currently in the NHL right now. So that bodes well. What do you attribute to Red Berenson's success for his ability to mold players into good professional hockey players?
Well, I think, Coach Berenson is obviously, he's one of the best coaches, I think, out there. He definitely brings a pro atmosphere into the locker room. I mean, he won Coach of the Year award in the NHL. He's definitely well known around the hockey world, and he knows his stuff. I mean, he's not well known for no reason. I mean, he really is a smart man. I think he treats us like pros, and I think that's the biggest thing. That's probably why guys have transitioned so well from Michigan to the NHL, just because of the atmosphere in the locker room.
Now, on December 11th, obviously that's a big game for you guys, the Cold War or the Big Chill at the Big House, playing Michigan State. How big a game is that, and how much do you look forward to it?
Definitely, this is going to be a huge game. I mean, it's going to be the biggest game ever played. So, biggest game ever watched. So, the most recent reports say that it's going to be about 110,000 people. So, I never would imagine I would have been in the biggest game ever played, but excited. Most of the guys on the team are excited. All the guys on the team are excited, and it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience that I'm going to try to cherish.
Do you ever get envious of the football players who get to play in front of like 110,000 people every Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, the more the better, I guess. I've actually started to like football. I never really liked football, to be honest with you. But being here now 4 years, I've actually grown to really like football. So I don't really care. I get more excited about the games when they're on, whether I get to go to the game, get a ticket here or there, or watch it on TV. I'm pretty intense.
So, Louis, as you enter into your senior season here, what are your primary goals for the rest of the year?
It's just to produce and try to help lead my team and be a team player. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I want to win. That's the number one thing in my mind. I want to win a national championship. I know we have the capabilities of doing that, and I don't want to sell my team short. I want to give my team all that I have to offer, and whether that be zone coverage or scoring goals. I want to produce, and I want to make this team a national championship team. So that's the biggest thing I think for me.
Do you hope to finish your schooling first as soon as your season's over? Do you feel pressure to sign a professional contract right away?
That's something I haven't really looked at yet. At the end of the season, I think I'll think about what I want to do with my life. I'm pretty far ahead in terms of schooling. I mean, I think I don't have many credits after. I don't have to take the second semester. I think I only take very few credits. So I got pretty far ahead in my studies. So I don't think school will really be an issue, and I don't think it'll get in the way at all. So but we'll see when that time comes around what's the best option for me.
Well, Louis, it's certainly great to hear that you've got your head on straight. And, so right away, I want to ask you if you want to do a couple quick-hit questions to round out the show.
Sure, sounds good.
Okay, what is your favorite memory of Yost Arena?
It has to be my freshman year against Notre Dame. I scored a goal with, 20 seconds left to win the game. Coach Behrens has said that's the loudest you ever heard Yost. It was sold out. I couldn't buy a ticket, and it was just a lot. I thought the building was going to collapse, and so did everyone else when the puck went in. So I think we hadn't beat them in, I think, 5-2. So and I think we were number one in the country, and they were up and coming, and it was a big rivalry at the time, and it was just really big.
What's your favorite collegiate fight song?
Oh, it's got to be "Hail to the Victors" for sure, the Michigan fight song. When you hear that, you feel at home.
What was your Halloween costume this year?
Oh, my Halloween costume, I don't know if I can tell you guys. it was something really funny, put it that way.
maybe
one
you can
of
tell
those
us
firefighter outfits with the hose sticking out the fly or something like that?
It was funny. It was really funny. It's more of like an inside joke type of thing, but it was pretty funny.
Okay. All right. I don't know how I got stuck asking this question, but who's your least favorite Jersey Shore character?
Least favorite Jersey Shore character is probably that Ronnie's girlfriend. I don't know what her name is. Sam, is it, or something like that?
Yeah.
Sam?
Sure.
I think that girl is probably my least favorite.
What was the easiest
I watched that show. It's a great show, though.
What was your easiest course that you took in Michigan?
Easiest course? Oh, man, I'm taking some easy ones. But, oh, man, I probably took this African American studies class. It was pretty simple. I mean, the teacher didn't know when I was there and when I wasn't. I think it was like one of these sectional classes, so you know there wasn't many kids in the class, but he was not that organized and probably didn't really know even if you handed in a paper or not. So it was kind of you could have just gone behind the scenes and probably got a grade in the course. So that's probably my easiest one.
All right, Louis. What's your nickname? Your hockey nickname?
Most guys call me Cappy. That's probably the biggest thing. But the guys who they realize that my actual birth certificate name is Luigi, they like to call me Gigi, or they call me Luigi. But mostly just Cappy. A lot of guys call me Cappy.
Good stuff. I guess this is the last question for you. Assuming your season ends with Michigan and you finish school, and you get the opportunity to wear the Senators uniform, is it going to be a little weird to wear a jersey that has a Spartan on the front of it?
Yeah, actually, I don't know if it's really a Spartan, though. There's no green in it, so I think that's okay. I grew up watching the Senators. I don't really look at them as a Spartan, so I don't think it'll be that big of a deal.
All right, Louis. I just want to thank you on behalf of the other guys here today in studio. Really appreciated having you on. We've got a lot to look forward to in Ottawa, and everyone's quite interested to see what happens at the end of this year.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. All the best.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Louis. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you. You do the same.
Hey, listeners, thanks for sticking with us. So we had two good interviews on the show this week, Louis Caparuso and James Gordon. Thanks, guys, for coming on the program this week. We really appreciated it. Tim, before we go and wrap this show up, I know there was an issue going around the league lately that you wanted to hit on. A number of people have talked about it, and it is the Colin Campbell email scandal.
I just have one thing to say about that. And I can't believe that there is any discussion at all over whether or not Colin Campbell should retain his job. I think by showing even the slightest bit of, of bias towards the officials and the way he conducts himself in regards to his son should immediately cost him his job. I've read all the, there's no other way to put it, bullshit articles about, man of integrity, exercise poor judgment. Nope, that's wrong. Those two things, don't work together. Moral people don't do immoral things. I'm no philosophy major, but he certainly screwed up in a big way. This man can't clearly not be trusted. These are only the emails that the public has had a chance to see through some good digging. Who knows what other kind of emails or discussions have gone on behind closed doors. I just think that it's in the NHL's best interest and just to have him removed immediately. I know a lot of people have called for his head for a number of other reasons, whether it's his history with headshots or just the way that he disciplines the league in general, like the whole coin toss suspension theory. Those things don't even matter. Pete Rose was banned from baseball for the same reasons, for even remotely offering the suspicion that, that there was fixing going on. And Colin Campbell should be no different. I read some more crap from Bob McKenzie today. And he said that, it'll just be the same boss, the same as the old boss if someone that comes in replaces him, which is even more crap. I mean, you know, these are why people go out and actually vote for politicians, because they believe in change. You know, people can be different. You know, the old boys club culture does not have to exist the way that it does in the NHL. Graham, you actually told me earlier today that we've noticed a real discrepancy in terms of who's backing Colin Campbell and who isn't. And there's certainly a divide. Sorry I've gone on at such length about this, but I just think that what he's done is disgusting. Bettman should be, you know, absolutely embarrassed at himself for the way this has been handled. And, you know, I would not feel bad at all if I saw Colin Campbell bagging my groceries.
I think it lends itself to the old boys network that has kind of characterized the NHL.
I think it personifies. Absolutely.
Kind of has a trickle down effect with the media, right? Because a lot of the new media people are like, kind of, you know, what the hell's going on? Why isn't this guy being held accountable? Well, a lot of these old voices around the league are saying, hey, if you know this guy, he's such a good guy and he's got some great stories, you know? So whether this guy is a source of information for some of these reporters who have vested interest in seeing him retain his job, kudos to the blogger for breaking the story. And maybe that's part of the reason why this story hasn't blown up bigger than it should have.
No, absolutely. And one other thing, one of my friends actually compared it to that the discussion going on is the same discussion that you would have between the Tim Hortons crowd and the classroom crowd. So there you go.
Well, you know what, Tim? Actually, I didn't think it was that big a deal until you brought it up. And listening to your soliloquy,
Tim standing holding, alone, illuminated in the limelight,
holding up a skull.
Yeah, exactly. And a candle. I think you brought up some really good points. And my attitude was sort of the Bob McKenzie attitude, when it's like, I personally think the NHL, or at least the people who run it, are the biggest joke going in all of professional sports. I think it's one of the most terribly run leagues in all of professional sports, if not the worst run league in all of professional sports. I think Bettman and his merry men, most of them are incredibly incompetent and have no idea what the direction of the game should be. And my attitude was like, well, what's it really going to change in the grand scheme of things to get Colin Campbell out or to leave him in? But I think you bring up a good point. You know, this is an opportunity for the NHL to sort of shed that old boys network image that everyone's grown accustomed to expecting out of this league. And it's that stagnant sort of no innovativeness and no progress in this league. And I think you bring up a good point, not only from an ethical standpoint, but I think from a league image standpoint and from a trying to move the game forward standpoint, it would be beneficial to have this guy step down and to bring in some fresh blood. Whether that has an impact, you know, in the grand scheme of things or not, who knows? But I think that is a valuable point.
It seems like the last frontier almost, Francois, what you're saying here. You know, we've seen so many changes in the game in our lifetime, right? You know, including very recently after the lockout, we've seen changes to the way that the game's handled socially. We've seen, you know, the inclusion of new media and everything that's gone along with it help shape the game. You know, the online presence of hockey is absolutely huge right now, and I actually truly believe that it is harder and better and more loyal fans because of this. We've also seen the economics completely changed, right? We've got a salary cap now. You know, that's a first step in becoming a respectable league. Now the only thing we have to do is just change the political culture that exists here. Like, I just don't understand how some of these people are qualified to be in the positions they're in. I saw one article of many suggesting that the NHL actually go out and find an old Supreme Court judge from the United States or from Canada, someone with a hockey interest who's willing to sit around and become the disciplinarian and just be the head of state, and the decision's the decision. I certainly have a lot more faith in someone who's been through the legal system. I know Gary Bettman's a lawyer and all, and so was Brian Burke, actually. But I actually wouldn't mind seeing someone with some credentials in place. I don't know, you guys?
I think that kind of lends itself to what Bob McKenzie was saying in the regards that it doesn't matter who's in the position, but someone's always going to complain, and it is true. But maybe if you made it like a third party, like completely panel, where they have no affiliation whatsoever with the league, besides handing out the supplementary discipline, I don't think that's a bad route to take.
Thank you guys for letting me vent about Colin Campbell. We don't really get to talk about the structure of the NHL at large, because that's actually one of the things that the three of us discuss most often away from the show when we're together, and that was great to be able to air that today. Sorry if you don't agree. So what do we see this weekend? What do we see Friday night?
Good question. I haven't filled out my prediction panel yet.
Well, besides that, I think the one thing we all agree that we get to see is David Backes not in a Senators uniform
anytime soon. Yep.
I'm wiping away my tears right now.
It's just depressing.
I wonder how many fans are going to watch tomorrow night's game and think of what could have been.
The summer of 11.
David
the
Backus.
The summer of Backus. The decision on TSN, hosted by Pierre O'Gro. Oh, David! Tell me about your decision!
What would your line even be?
You're a monster!
I'm taking my talent to the bureaucracy. no, Backus.
I think Brian Murray is severely underestimated, like, the talent that will be out there in, like, the next summer. And we're going to sign some.
That's only because all these other idiots have panicked and signed everybody the 14-year contract.
Now you can't fucking sign a first-round pick ever again until these contracts expire, right? Like,
yeah.
People even considered that? Like, what are you going to do with your first-round talent over the next few years?
You know what could be said about these teams, though, at the same time? Is that if there is a new CBA, you can be sure that there's going to be a way to get rid of these guys. Because or else, how many of these teams are locked up to ridiculous deals these days?
They're throwing fucking fault.
Seems like too many.
Seems like every contract that comes out these days is terrible.
Yep. It's only the stars who have the ridiculous ones. Unfortunately, the guys that you actually want are the guys that are absolutely impossible to even remotely consider including in your team, right? Like, the days of the big trades are completely gone now.
Yeah.
Failing for, like, you know, locker room problems, drug issues, cheating, you know, someone telling off a coach.
That's what we were saying last week. Like, the league is just totally stagnated.
Yep.
Well, there's no buzz. It's an unforeseen consequence of the cap era. The cap era is supposed to create a lot of player activity. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap this up. It's been a productive show. We've had a lot to talk about. Lots of good guests this week. James Gordon and Louis Caparusa. Thanks again for coming on the podcast this week, guys. Tim, Francois, been a pleasure. See you next week.
Right back at you, piss pump.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure working with both of you guys. Especially when Tim's eyes light up as big as Jim Lang's.
Awesome. All right, guys. Take care. See you next week.
Later.